The headlines, Tehran says political divisions within the U.S. are preventing Washington from making political decisions in the Vienna talks, adding that should not result in a violation of Iran's rights. The head of Lebanon's Hezbollah movement says Israel will fail to normalize ties with the Arab world because the region's people will not let that happen. And Omicron spreading fast across Russia, where a new record daily high has been registered. Hello and welcome, everybody. Secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council, Adi Shamkhani, says political divisions within the U.S. ruling establishment prevent Washington from making political decisions needed to advance the JCPOA revival talks in Vienna. In a Twitter post, Shamkhani said the U.S. government cannot make up for its domestic crises by violating the rights of the Iranian people. A few days ago, the U.S. granted a series of sanctions waivers to Iran, but now some Republican lawmakers are expressing outrage at Washington over that decision. In a classified testimony before Congress of U.S. Special Envoy for Iran, Robert Malley, Republican lawmakers have called for a public hearing. They said the Biden administration has not been transparent about the process of its conduct regarding the JCPOA. The U.S. unilaterally withdrew from the accord in 2018, and now Tehran is calling for guarantees against any violations in the future. Iran has unveiled a new long-range ballistic missile to mark the 43rd anniversary of the Islamic Revolution. The missile, dubbed Khaybar Shikan, is able to hit targets within range of 1,450 kilometers with pinpoint accuracy. It also can penetrate into missile shields with high maneuverability. The projectile is classified in the third generation of long-range missiles developed by the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps. In recent years, Iran has made great advances in its missile program, which it says is entirely defensive. The Secretary General of Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement says Iran's foes cannot easily attack the country. In an interview with Iran's Al Alam TV, Saeed Hassan Nasrallah said it's not in the U.S. interest to attack Iran, as it cannot stop Tehran's peaceful nuclear activities. Nasrallah said he believes Israel's repeated threats in recent months to attack Iran's nuclear sites are all empty words, and the regime won't make the mistake of launching a war on Iran. Nasrallah said Tel Aviv knows if it strikes Iran, the response will be harsh, decisive, and precise. He said some Arab states that normalized ties with Israel can't help the regime militarily. Nasrallah also touched on recent diplomatic contacts between Israel and some Arab states. He said Israel's plan to normalize ties with the Arab world is doomed to failure since people in the region oppose it.
In Bahrain, they will not be supportive of Iran. Even inside Saudi Arabia, the Saudi society are not with normalization of ties, even those who go on televisions. This is Egypt, this is Jordan, this is Northern Africa, Indonesia, Malaysia, Afghanistan, Iran, Pakistan, Afghanistan, all the Arab and Islamic world.
Nasrallah said the regime's normalization efforts are mainly aimed at pushing Palestinians to a state of despair so they accept defeat and give up on their cause to liberate their land. He said Palestinians will resist such plots as they're brave and steadfast on the U.S. sanctions on Hezbollah. Nasrallah said such measures won't have a major impact on the resistance movement. He said the U.S. sanctions war cannot stop Hezbollah's growth and development. Nasrallah also referred to Yemen's recent retaliatory strikes against the UAE. He said Abu Dhabi had to plead for help from Western countries following the attacks. Nasrallah said such attacks will continue until the UAE and Saudi Arabia stop their aggression against the people of Yemen. Mariam Saleh joined us earlier with more on the Hezbollah Secretary General's remarks.
Of course, he mentioned the fact that the United States is building a huge embassy in Lebanon, a new embassy, different from the one it is in right now, and that the U.S. has always been, before 1982, before the attacks, the original attacks on the former embassy in Beirut, and the fact that there was so much protest and opposition against U.S. Dictates in Lebanon and control over Lebanon and interference in Lebanon, it's the fact that the U.S., the main CIA center, the main center of intelligence for the United States is based in Beirut. And this embassy that they are building is going to be a center not only to control Lebanon, it's going to be for the entire region. All this normalization is only a normalization between two countries that are actually countries made out of glass, as he mentioned, especially the United Arab Emirates, that this is a state made out of glass. They cannot protect themselves from a confrontation with Ansar Allah that is just recently retaliating to the presence or the participation of the United Arab Emirates in the aggression against Yemen, and they could not handle that. They pleaded for the entire world to help out after Ansar Allah and the Yemeni army decided that they would retaliate targets within, deep in the heart of the UAE. So therefore, how could they help protect the Israelis if they could not protect themselves? Of course, he spoke generally about the region, about the problems that are in Lebanon, the U.S. sanctions in Lebanon. He also, of course, mentioned the fact that the United States is trying to revive Daesh, trying to revive that Takfiri Wahhabi group in order for it to either give pretext to its presence in the eastern Euphrates, to continue its theft of the natural resources of Syria, but also to continue that that control that they have over Syria, and to try once more, perhaps, to take down the government of Syria, which is a part and parcel of the resistance alliance.
Welcome back. Stores and businesses remain closed in the occupied West Bank to mourn three Palestinians who have been killed at the hands of Israeli forces. Resistance groups are calling a public strike as part of measures to protest the regime's non-stop crimes. Let's now cross over to Ramallah, where correspondent Mona Kandil is standing by with the latest. Mona, what updates do you have to share with us?
That's right. In the cities of Nablus, Tul Karim, Jenin, as well as in Ramallah, a general strike was announced in these cities where shops had been closed. It's one image of sadness, where Palestinians were, of course, sad for the crime that was carried out yesterday in the city of Nablus, when three Palestinian youths were killed by Israeli forces in cold blood. At the time, the Israeli soldiers or the Israeli regime had claimed that those three had been taking part in shootings against Israeli soldiers. Israeli forces raided Al-Mahfiyeh neighborhood in day and killed those Palestinians while they were in their vehicle in cold blood. The Palestinian Authority, Palestinian government, as well as the different political and Islamic factions denounced the killing of those three Palestinian youths from the city of Nablus, describing what happened as an assassination. And the Palestinian Ministry of Foreign Affairs had called for an international inquiry and held the Israeli regime completely responsible for this crime, because the Israeli soldiers didn't try to arrest those Palestinians. If it's true, as they claim, that they were taking part in shootings against Israeli soldiers at the numerous of checkpoints in the occupied West Bank, then they have a right to be at least arrested and investigated. However, there was a clear, order from the Israeli military establishment to kill those Palestinians in the spot.
All right, thanks a lot, Mona Kandil, joining us from Ramallah. Elsewhere, Russia is logging a record number of daily coronavirus infections as Omicron continues to spread like wildfire in the country. Authorities have detected over 183,000 new cases within a span of 24 hours. They've also reported approximately 700 fatalities. Faced with the biggest virus surge yet, Russian authorities have resisted imposing any major restrictions. The vaccine rollout is slow. Only about half the population has been fully immunized so far. The total number of coronavirus cases since the beginning of the pandemic has now surpassed 13 million. NATO announces plans to ensure a larger permanent presence of its forces in Eastern Europe. Critics say the move is designed to further provoke Russia. Jerome Hughes reports from Brussels.
In recent days, a series of separate delegations from the EU have travelled to the United States, Ukraine and Russia as tensions between the West and Moscow show no sign of abating. The Kremlin insists the security of Russian citizens is paramount and therefore Ukraine cannot be allowed to join NATO. On Monday, the head of the 30-nation alliance confirmed additional NATO forces have been moved to Eastern Europe, and there's a plan to make that permanent.
There is a process now going on within NATO, also, of course, in close consultation with our military commanders, to adjust our presence in the eastern part of the alliance.
Peace activists claim NATO is being unnecessarily provocative.
We would have a lot of advantages only with one symbolical sentence, not to expand with Ukraine and Georgia. And then Putin would be satisfied and you can make agreements with him.
The EU is sending huge amounts of money to Kiev.
More than 17 billion euros.
Even though the bloc's own agencies say Ukraine is corrupt at the highest levels, EU citizens are worried the situation could exacerbate the bloc's energy crisis, given that we import so much from Russia.
Putting in danger European gas supplies. So this is really frightening to me personally. And I think the whole European population should be frightened about this.
That could be a solution for the energy crisis. Everybody just spend less money on army and more money on compensation kind of energy support for the people.
A number of political commentators say some senior figures in the EU and NATO believe the West is pushing Russia a bit too far. Double standards and hypocrisy are at play, according to impartial foreign policy analysts.
They remind us the United States has approximately 800 military bases in 80 nations around the world. This as Russia is vilified for moving troops within its own borders. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Four decades after the victory of the Islamic Revolution of Iran, Yemenis say they are still being inspired by that event and, most importantly, its key role in supporting the Palestinian cause. Abdul Latif Al-Washali reports from Sana'a.
As Iranians celebrate the 43rd anniversary of the Islamic Revolution that transformed their country from a U.S. ally to a bitter opponent, Yemenis are still facing a deadly U.S.-backed war. This has urged Yemeni politicians to try to learn more about the Islamic Revolution and its stance against U.S. hegemony.
The region was about to fall prey to the American Zionist project, and the Arab regimes would have given up on the Palestinian cause, resulting in the further oppression of the Palestinians and the deterioration of the Arabs' dream of liberation from American hegemony. The Islamic Revolution turned Iran into the first country to be freed from U.S. dependence. It created a psychological balance among the people. As for the Arab puppet regimes, they feared the danger of the people and delayed their normalization with the Zionists. Today, Muslims are aware of U.S. dominating policies and find liberation necessary.
Yemeni politicians and scholars say the Islamic Revolution keeps on inspiring Yemeni people to stand against the U.S. and its supported forces in the region, just as they did on their September 21st revolution 8 years ago.
I still remember the outbreak of the Islamic Revolution of Iran. I was studying in secondary school and Arab people were constantly talking about it. We even wore t-shirts with the image of Imam Khomeini. But given the importance of this revolution, many Arab dictators started to ban the clothes that had the image of Imam Khomeini on them. And this is one of the first memories that I have of the Islamic Revolution. The Yemeni people have learned a lot from the Islamic Revolution in Iran. It encouraged them to stand against the colonial policies in their own country. And this also sparked the revolution of September 21st, 2014.
Since the victory of the Islamic Revolution, Iran has always been a strong supporter of the Palestinian cause and has marked the International Quds Day. And now it is also standing beside the people of Yemen and the U.S.-backed Saudi war against them.
Observers say all the free people of the world must look up to the Islamic Revolution of Iran and follow in the footsteps of its leaders in order to stand against the U.S. hegemony. They say the Islamic Revolution will remain a source of pride for all Yemenis. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
The Islamic Revolution in 1979 replaced Iran's monarchy with an Islamic establishment that has been governing the country since then. Danjum Abdullahi reports on the impact of the revolution in Nigeria.
When the Iranian Islamic Revolution took place in 1979, prominent Nigerian Islamic cleric Sheikh Ibrahim Al-Zazaki was a young university student preaching against immorality. He says that the 1979 Islamic Revolution in Iran and the leader of the revolution, Imam Khomeini, were sources of inspiration to many young Nigerians.
It makes us, you know, it boosts our moral and it makes us feel that what we have been yearning and aspiring is realizable. It's possible since it has been realized elsewhere. You know, the success of the revolution was a turning point in modern history.
Professor Sadiq Abba was also a young student who cared about the common good for all Nigerians and said that the Islamic Revolution was based on knowledge and the collective willpower on the Iranian people.
The Iranian Revolution is a revolution that sprang up to address global injustice, global inequalities, and global socioeconomic exploitation and expropriations by the Western world.
Dr. Imam Mukhtar says the 1979 Islamic Revolution was a change that was inspired by Iranians who have had enough.
It was a unique revolution that was led and driven by individuals, groups, young people and old alike, who saw a frustration with the system, which was with the Shah regime, which was not only pro-West, but then subduing the people within the domestic environment, and it was a collective responsibility.
Experts believe that one of the significant outcomes of the 1979 Islamic Revolution was turning Iran into a power in the Middle East region with even influence in global affairs. Ranjum Abdullahi, Abuja.
And that brings us to an end here on this edition of World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
سیم دو
شمد یعنی
بازار Iran has many natural resources. Some are agricultural and some other are natural wonders enjoyed by tourists and locals alike. Still, other resources have to be extracted by mining. The mining industry is a very important component of the economic health of Iran, contributing billions in a given year. This modern industry is also heavily dependent on the discoveries and innovations made by knowledge-based companies. These firms are often pioneers of development, opening new horizons for industries while making industrial processes more efficient and less costly.
Hello again and welcome to another edition of Bazaar with me, Sarah Dema. One of the biggest capacities of Iran is its rich natural resources. Yes, we are talking about mines. They have brought tremendous profits while creating numerous jobs. This week, we will look at the mining industry and some of its related trades. We also want to uncover how this industry continues to expand and who is helping with its development. So let's start the show. There are thousands of mines in the country, but before extracting material and using it, samples first need to be taken to labs for analysis. We visited a knowledge-based company that specializes in testing mineral, soil, and water samples from mines. Zara Osmo was first established in 2006 and was created because of the lack of such services inside the country. Previously, analyzing samples from mines was outsourced abroad, but now, domestic sample analysis has never been as advanced as it is today. Using the latest technology, this company analyzes samples on an industrial scale with speed, precision, and high-quality testing. Most of the machines have been imported, as well as transferring the analysis know-how from other countries. It mainly provides services to the mining industry and some of its related trades. Samples are sent from mines nationwide to the advanced labs for titration. This is a common lab method of quantitative chemical analysis that determines the concentration of a substance. This massive facility has several departments, each dedicated to a specific activity and equipped with quality control processes. After crushing, samples are processed into liquids, either using high temperatures or alkaline melting. Then they are fed to high-tech machines for analysis. These machines provide a sample profile showing what materials and in what percentage are present. It's important to get a detailed survey of material in mining areas. The industry routinely collects samples to assist with decision making. This data helps with exploration, resource estimation, grade control, or plant design and balances. Indigenizing sample analysis services have saved the country millions of dollars in outsourcing so far. This has also sped up many processes as the industry no longer has to wait months for analysis results. Typically, when a sale transaction of mining material is to take place, the sample profile must be presented. A profile shows some criteria, such as the purity and concentration of a material, revealing the quality of the batch. The results are also used to determine whether samples match up with international standardizations. This is important information used for exports and imports of mining material. This knowledge-based firm has labs in three other provinces, including the mining heartland of Kerman. Its test results are trusted by the Ministry of Industry, Mining and Trade, the National Environmental Protection Agency, Mining Investment Insurance Corporation, and the National Copper Industries Corporation, among many others. This knowledge-based company also collaborates with research and academic institutions. Some 200 people are employed at these labs directly, and nearly 500 others work indirectly for this company. One of the competitive advantages is its rapid and reliable mineral testing. Plus, its highly developed quality control methods is what keeps them relevant in the market. Nearly 75% of all samples in the country are analyzed at these high-tech labs at affordable costs. Also, it has helped develop and expand Iranian mining sectors through its dependable lab studies. As part of its future vision, this knowledge-based company hopes to launch laboratories in neighboring regions. It also welcomes mineral samples from abroad for analysis. Iran is one of the most important mineral producers in the world. Here's an interesting fact that there are 60 billion tons of mineral reserves in the country. Roughly 40 billion tons of that total are proven reserves, meaning they are mineable. Iron, copper, zinc, aluminum, and other minerals are also extracted from 6,000 mines in the country. The mining sector has made big strides in recent years, but it is still developing. Figures from the National Geological Survey and Mineral Exploration Agency show last year over 400 million tons of minerals were extracted. Aside from metal materials, the country is rich in construction materials too. Gravel, decorative stones, marble, sand, and cement make up over 60% of the country's mineral reserves. The government has been developing production capacities through various programs while expanding the sector's exploration projects to this end. One of these plans is to revive idle mines. Out of 10,000 mines in the country, around 4,000 of them are idle. It's noteworthy, over the last 2 years, some 500 small-scale idle mines have been brought back to life. That's based on the Iranian Mines and Mining Industries Development and Renovation Organization. One of the benefits of the ongoing revival plan has been the rise in nationwide employment. Presently, well over 100,000 miners are at work in the sector. You might find it interesting to know that Iran holds the largest zinc reserves. Plus, it has the 9th largest copper reserves and the 10th largest iron ore and uranium reserves. With 7% of global mineral reserves, the export of mineral products generates millions in foreign revenue annually. But export figures could be much higher if the raw material is developed further with added value. Numerous industries use raw materials provided by the mining sector. In the first half of 2020 alone, Iran was credited for producing 50% of the world's sponge iron. The majority of iron is used in the domestic steel industry. Last year, the World Steel Association ranked Iran as the 10th largest steel maker in the world. Figures showed that last year, over 55 million tons of mineral products were exported. The value of these exports was nearly $8 billion. The organization estimates that this year's export values will be much higher.
We all know what it feels like to be sick. You feel sluggish, fatigued, or lose your appetite, and perhaps become more sensitive to pain and cold. Many times, people can treat themselves at home with self-care and homemade remedies. Other times, a trip to the doctor does the trick. But even then, some ailments require more advanced interventions for diagnosis and therapies provided by hospitals. This is where medical devices come in handy. The health sector is mainly dependent on the accuracy and zero failure of advanced medical technology to get the job done.
This time, we're going to take you through Iran's high-tech medical device productions. We wanted to see who the big players in this specialized market are and check out their activities in the medical health sector. Plus, we wanted to see why this market continues to burgeon and uncover how scientific advancements are contributing to the national economy. Let's start the show. Quest for answers led us on a journey to the Science and Research Park of Isfahan, where we visited Behyar Sanat Sepahan. It was first established over two decades ago and now manufactures over 80 types of high-tech medical equipment and products. Its products cover a range of medical devices like hospital furniture, surgical tables, and lighting systems. But its main claim to fame is its advanced nuclear technology, such as the medical linear accelerator. This machine is commonly used for radiation treatments for cancer patients by delivering high-energy X-rays or electrons to the region of a patient's tumor. It's worth mentioning that this device costs roughly $3 to $4 million in foreign markets. This company can manufacture the linear accelerator at a third of this price. Plus, 90% of the device components are homegrown in Isfahan province. This company also makes other types of nuclear medical technology, such as the U-arm and ceiling-mounted radiation therapy equipment. But that's not all. They manufacture security and inspection systems used in airports, such as X-ray machines and handheld metal detectors as well. Developing indigenous technology of its kind has saved the country millions of dollars on imports and has benefited many patients so far. It might be interesting to know that the technology for creating radiation therapy devices has been generally monopolized by the United States, Britain, and China. Iran is the fourth country in the world to be able to domestically manufacture such complex and sensitive nuclear technology. And this is all thanks to massive advancements in Iran's research and academic circles. The beating heart of this company is its research and development department. This knowledge-based firm employs over 500 engineers and specialists, such as medical physicists, oncologists, and dosimetrists, among others. This firm also collaborates with the National Atomic Energy Organization, the Vice Presidential Office for Science and Technology, Ministry of Health, and Isfahan University of Medical Sciences. Dependability and accuracy of its products are key components in delivering high-quality performance. As such, this knowledge-based manufacturer makes its products along international guidelines for quality and safety. It has received its certifications and production permits from the Ministry of Health and Medical Education and National Medical Device Directorate, among many more. As part of its future vision, this firm is eyeing neighboring markets for exports, which are currently facing high demands for linear accelerators. Their ultimate goal is to elevate the quality of lives of people through creating technology that treats ill patients. The products of this company are vital for the treatment of cancer. Due to the cruel sanctions, many restrictions have been placed on Iran's purchase and imports of this equipment and its supporting services. This knowledge-based firm sees the sanctions as an opportunity for growth and advancing scientific knowledge inside the country. Now, medical devices are considered a fundamental component of the healthcare system, and their benefits continue to increase with the advancements of scientific discovery. Iran is globally ranked fourth in the engineering of 1,000 of medical devices, and this sector is thriving in the country. But you don't have to take my word for it. Let's check out some statistics and figures in this field. Domestic medical device production has grown by 213% since 2019, reducing imports by 10% in the same period. Plus, exports of medical devices are up by 10% this year.
Over 2,000 different types of medical devices and supplies are domestically produced under the license of the Ministry of Health based on EU standards. That's all based on figures from the Medical Equipment Office at the Ministry of Health. Based on the Medical Device Directorate, there are roughly 1,000 medical device manufacturers nationwide. These companies provide 30% of revenues in the domestic medical device market. The directorate also says export revenues were well over $24 million this year. But the goal is to generate nearly $1 billion in revenues in the coming years. These statistics have been largely credited to governmental support for the development of knowledge and research companies. Several policies have been implemented over the years to help businesses in their efforts to create new products and increase their exports. The Ministry of Science, Research and Technology recently launched a focus plan to help companies with international standardizations. This program assesses the compatibility of the Iranian knowledge-based products with global markets under the World Trade Organization standards. The plan aims to attract foreign investments. Government officials and industry participants say it's a significant step towards keeping high-tech medical devices and products relevant in the international arena. Iran exports its medical devices and products to numerous countries across the globe. But scores of people from abroad also visit Iran to benefit from the cutting-edge technologies and the excellent medical service. This is called medical tourism. The National Center for Developing Health Tourism says Iran has the potential to earn $7 billion annually from this sector. These days, medical tourism is considered a booming industry as some 24 million patients travel for medical treatments around the globe every year. Patients Without Borders Publishing Group puts the global value at around $90 billion. And Iran is a major destination for health tourism in the region because of the rapid investment in healthcare infrastructure in order to satisfy surging demands. Iran's two popular medical tourist destinations are Tehran and Mashhad. Other popular destinations include the city of Shiraz and Isfahan, but the coronavirus outbreak has significantly reduced the number of travelers. Industry participants say medical tourism is a win-win opportunity both for the country and foreign patients. This is because Iran offers affordable and quality treatment services. While many visit the country for cosmetic surgery, Iran is also known for its organ transplants, heart and neurosurgeons, among other life-saving medical treatments. The government has set goals to increase annual medical travelers to around 2 million over the next 4 years. Before the coronavirus pandemic hit, Iran hosted a record-breaking 600,000 medical travelers in 2019. That's according to the Medical Tourism Department at the Ministry of Health. The ministry says these tourists generated over $1 billion in foreign currency. Simply put, wheat is part of the grass family. Some have argued that wheat domesticated mankind, bringing humans away from the colorful and adventurous hunter-gatherer lifestyle and settling them permanently next to their fields. It is also said that wheat is responsible for the agricultural revolution. It has supplied the calories that made it possible for the world's population to raise toward 8 billion people. Presently, wheat is grown on more land areas across the world than any other food crop. All right, everyone, it's time for me to pass it over to my dear colleague out there on the field for an exciting adventure. Take it away.
In Iran, you're legally not allowed to cut a tree, even if it's damaging your personal residence, unless you have a permit from the municipality. But even with a permit, you wouldn't want to kill the tree if there's a way to relocate it safely. That's where companies like Nitin Tadbir step in to get you out of trouble. With its professionally trained arborists, the 15-year-old firm offers all kinds of tree transplanting and tree moving services using the latest technology. The idea of launching the company struck the mind of its CEO and his teenagers, when he was engrossed in finding a way to save Mother Nature. Ethan Tadbir holds a record in the number of mature tree transplants in Iran. It has so far relocated 40,000 broad-leaved and coniferous trees across the country. Aside from offering tree care and transplant services, the company also grows a variety of plant species, including trees with aerial roots. Tadbir has under its belt a dedicated team of certified arborists. They're in fact your tree doctors who apply their advanced skills to ensure the safety and health of your trees. The Iranian brand says it does not stop at this point and aims to expand its team with the ultimate goal of making a name for itself in the regional market. Transplanting is a complex and often risky process, so you want to be sure you're putting the work in the hands of a professionally trained arborist. And Ethan Tadbir says its team is always there to give you a hand.
Without further ado, let's dive right into some interesting news and trends regarding Iran's mining and mineral production industry. We have talked about mining a lot throughout the program. Let's take a look at some major mining development projects in this field.
Several development projects worth $1.6 billion were inaugurated in Kerman province over the summer. These include a steel production complex, a coke production system, and a copper cathode production unit, among others. Additionally, a lime and dolomite complex has been added to the mix. These projects also include the installation of industrial machines. Some 4,000 jobs were created too.
Along the lines of mining development, the industry requires more machinery to help get the job done.
2% of the machinery needed in the industry has been supplied last year, 1% of which was domestically produced and the rest was imported. That's according to Tehran's Chamber of Commerce, Industries, Mines and Agriculture Industry. Data from the Chamber of Commerce shows that domestic miners need 25,000 machineries in the next 4 years. The supply of these items will cost around $6 billion.
Exploration in the mining industry is paying off. About 1 billion tons of new iron ore reserves have been identified in Iran over the past 6 years.
The share of these discoveries from the entire iron ore reserves is 33%. That's according to figures published by the Iranian Mines and Mining Industries Development and Renovation Organization. The country's total reserves of iron ore presently stand at nearly 3 billion tons. The report reveals explorations for more reserves are still underway in 30 provinces.
And that wraps up our program for today. Thank you for tuning in. I'll see you next time on another edition of Bazaar.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
The world is a very, very big house, many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up, we must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين.
My name is Sheikh Zaid Al Salami.
A few years ago, I started the course of wanting to commentate on a very important book that I believe is something that would be useful for everyone who reads it
and that is the book Mafatih al-Hayat, written by Ayatollah al-Uzma al-Sheikh Jawadi Amuli. Something that we can learn from Islam is how we conduct ourselves as far as employers, as far as directors of a company or an organization, as far as rulers. And what we can learn also from Islam is how we conduct ourselves as employees, as workers, as people who are a part of an organization. What kind of responsibility do you have in dealing with those who are under you, those who you are responsible for? You employ someone to do something, you ask them to do something. What kind of expectation is there from your side as the employer? What kind of expectation is there from the worker's side, from the employee's side? Imam Sajjad, salamullahi alayhi, he says, this is where we see that when you're dealing with an enemy, when you're dealing with a non-Muslim, when you're dealing with whoever it may be, a righteous person, doesn't matter who it is. Some people say, well, it doesn't matter, he's a bad person. Well, it doesn't matter, he's not Muslim. Well, it doesn't matter. No, absolutely not. Here it says from Imam Sajjad, salamullahi alayhi, this is in Al-Amani by Sheikh Al-Saduq. He says, alaykum bi ada'il amana. You need to make sure that you fulfill and you honor what is entrusted to you. فَلَوْ أَنَّ قَاتِلَ أَبِي الْحُسَيْنِ If the killer of my father, Al-Husayn ibn Ali alayhim as-salam, if my father's killer, اِتَمَنَنِي عَلَى السَّيْفِ الَّذِي قَتَلَهُ بِهِ لَأَدَّيْتُهُ إِلَيْهِ If he was to have entrusted me with that very sword that he used to kill my father, I would have returned that sword. Subhanallah. Imam al-Sajjad, Imam Ali al-Sajjad alayhi salam, he is saying that if the killer of my father would have entrusted his sword with me, that very sword that killed my own father, I would have returned that sword. Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alihi, he says, Addul amanat, fulfill, respect, honor that which has been entrusted to you, walau ila qatalatil Anbiya, even if they are the killers of Anbiya, an enemy of yours. You know, before one day you were friends and he gave you something, or he said something to you and he said, this is a secret. There's no justification for you to betray that amana. And al-majalis bil-amana, as we've mentioned before, you know, if I wanted something to be publicized, I would say it in the public. But I said something out of the sensitivity of the topic, you know, whether it be something social, whether it be something political, whether it be something personal, you know, I don't want it to be shared out there, you know, and all of a sudden you come to realize that, you know, your personal discussion with this person was being recorded or was shared by somebody else. You know, that's khiyana, that's betrayal. And Islam is extremely, extremely against this.
Ayatollah Jawadi Amuli, the author of the book Mafatih al-Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafatih, ought to be in two volumes. One volume, the present volume, Mafatih al-Janan, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc. But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree. Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam, who has stressed out the reward for praying, has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree. There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment. When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned. We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi, he says, Al-amanatu tajdibul ghina, that being a faithful person, being a loyal person, will bring richness, will make you rich in the sense of you'll have risk and sustenance. Wal-khiyanatu tajdibul faqr, whereas betrayal will bring about poverty. It's a sign of being a righteous and a pious person that you are someone who is always going to be fulfilling that level of being a trustful person, and you are known by that, always being kind, being generous. Even if someone is evil and someone's going to be mistreating you, is there anyone worse than the qatil of Imam Hussein alayhi salam? You still need to honor what is entrusted to you. Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi, talking about goodness, talking about kindness, talking about generosity, talking about always not being the aggressive person, not being the person who is always antagonizing others in that negative way and things like that. He says, رأس العقل بعد الإيمان بالله التودد إلى الناس. The axle, the basis, the foundation of rationality, of intellectuality, after iman, after faith in God, after believing in God, is tawaddud, is wanting good, being compassionate to people. Wa istina'u al-khayr, and being nice, accommodating for goodness towards people. Ila kulli birrin wa fajir, towards anyone who is either good or bad, righteous or corrupt. You are doing good for them. Istina'u al-khayr ila man huwa ahlah wa ila man huwa ghayru ahlah. Imam Ridha salamullahi alayhi, he says, being good, being kind towards those who deserve it and towards those who do not deserve it. Istani' al-khayr, istani' al-khayr, do good to those who deserve it or to those who don't deserve it. Fa'in lam tusib من هو أهله فأنت أهله. And if it falls, if your goodness falls on someone who doesn't deserve it, you deserve it. So you're doing good. Don't worry about if it falls on someone good or someone's bad, as long as you are the person who is doing good. That's the kind of attitude that we need to have as far as being good is concerned, as far as all of those wonderful positive outcomes that we will receive, the rewards that we will receive in this dunya and also in the akhirah, when we are good to other people, when we cooperate, when we associate ourselves with good people, when we always make sure that even if there's someone bad, we still make sure that we are good. We don't go down to their level. And these are some of the things that Ayatollah Jawadi continues to discuss and speak about as far as rights is concerned, as far as all of these things are concerned, because as the Holy Prophet has said, خَيْرُ النَّاسِ مَنْ انْتَفَعَ النَّاسِ, the best of people is someone who benefits other people. That's the kind of person that you want to be recognized as. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen, wa salatu wa salamu ala Sayyidina Muhammad wa alihi tahirin.
Driving past, walking fast to the field of dreams, hear the children scream.
There was The Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind, a momentary emotion, space spent in time, in time.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.